very brief informational meeting, Scenic Waterways Review Progress Report. Michael Carrier from the Parks and Recreation Department will just come up. This won't take long. And sorry, Michael, but we're using you at the moment to see if we can't get some other members down here and open the full committee. So take it away. You are in the public record, and you're going to be doing what you have to do to fill a certain obligation you've got.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Carrier, Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I like the sound of that brief report. Because that's my intent, is to keep this brief. I mentioned in an update to you a few weeks ago that we were working on fulfilling the requirements of Senate Bill 606 from the 2001 legislative session, which directed the department to complete a review of the Scenic Waterways Program, including a review of the recreational placer mining issue within Scenic Waterways. Just by way of background, the Scenic Waterway system was first established by Citizen Initiative in 1970. And between 70 and 1988, a total of 19 rivers and one lake have been designated either by Citizen Initiative, by executive order of the governor, or by legislative action. They now encompass 1,150 river miles within the Scenic Waterway system and the one lake. And while placer mining was banned in the original initiative, a 1982 opinion of the Attorney General determined that recreational placer mining, which is presently defined as either panning for gold with a pan or mining with a motorized suction dredge in which the motor doesn't exceed 10 horsepower and the suction hose doesn't exceed 4 inches in diameter, that kind of mining was not included in the or intended to be included in the placer mining prohibition imposed on scenic waterways. So recreational placer mining was allowed to occur in those waterways after 1982. In 1994, the Attorney General issued a contradictory opinion, this time determining that recreational placer mining should have been included in that ban. This resulted in legislation in 1995, which temporarily restored recreational placer mining conditioned on permits from the Division of State Lands on scenic waterways, pending a review of the waterways program by my department and a report of that review to the legislature. I'm sorry to say my department failed to complete an adequate review after 95. That sunset that was provided for in the original bill to end recreational placer mining after the report was made was extended in the 97 session and extended again in the 99 session. So we took that message seriously after the in the 2001 session. We took that message seriously and went to work on getting that review done in a definitive fashion that allows you and us to work together to resolve this issue. And the first step that we took was to contract with Oregon State University's Institute for Natural Resources to do a comprehensive study of both the Scenic Waterway program over the last 20 years as well as this issue of placer mining. And the Institute delivered its report to our department last month, or in January, actually. And that's just the first step. I envision this as a three-phase process before we report the review to you. First phase is the scientific study and the stakeholder interviews that Oregon State provided for us. Second step is for us now to pull the other state agencies that have a regulatory and other interest in this issue together, as well as stakeholders, environmental organizations, the miners themselves, together, and look at the reports, vet those, make sure that they accurately characterize the relevant issues, and then to talk about a consensus-based policy development that we could present to you that deals with this issue once and for all. The final phase would then be to come to you after our Parks and Recreation Commission approves of any policy recommendations, to come to you and present any necessary changes that may be required from the legislature. And we may not necessarily need legislative action on this. Those changes could be a change in the law, could be administrative rule action of the agencies that have authority in this area, or it could be simply letting the present law take effect, which would sunset recreational placer mining in 2005. So the second phase of this review will begin immediately. We're putting together a stakeholders group now. We'll be holding a meeting in the next few weeks and begin reviewing the reports and talking about policy analysis and policy recommendations. it's my expectation that that will probably extend beyond the current session, and it will take several months to complete, and then we'll be back to report to you in the 2005 session on our results and our recommendations. So with that, I'd be happy certainly to answer any questions you have about this.
My suggestion is, as you proceed, please keep both the chair and the vice chair apprised of what your findings are and how your process is moving.
We would be very happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think that's satisfactory. If you could, please, I appreciated you reporting to me earlier. But I'm really more comfortable if you try to get both to the chair and the vice chair, and Senator Beyer, I think, would like to have this information to proceed. I think you've certainly done better than somebody a few sessions back. I remember kind of pushing a button on their computer and printing out the previous biennium's report. You know, didn't quite do it for me. And so this is I think the direction that we wanted you to move. So we have some basis to consider, sunsets and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly agree. Oregon State has provided us an excellent literature review, a scientific analysis of this issue, and now it's up to the policy analysis. And my goal is to not have an extended fight in front of you, or that involves you folks here in the next session or even in this session about this issue, that we come with some consensus-based recommendations for you to endorse.
Okay. That's what I'd like to see. Consensus for once.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a technical question. You said recreational plaster mining is motors not exceeding 10 horsepower or 4-inch diameter, and I was wondering about that. I did check. Statute says 16 horsepower unless there's a change someplace.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I pulled the 10 horse out of the it may have been an outdated reference. I think the 16 horse was in place earlier, and by rule it's been I will double check that and report to you directly, but I thought I saw a reference that by rule of DSL that had been reduced to a 10 horse.
Okay. Well, that's
and rather than take time and look now to where I just saw that reference this morning, I will look at it and follow up with you.
Well, to make it easier for you, page 5 of 8 in the report you gave us has reference to the 16 horse, so maybe you can get back to us and let us know about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Judith handed this.
It's on page 4 of Senate Bill 606.
Right.
Okay. Is where it is. So, but I'd like to, you know, if you change that by rule, I'd like to know that.
And 5 of 8 in the report, Judith. Now that we're straight, anything else on this? Okay. I'm going to close the informational hearing. And
we can take testimony.
We're going to start taking testimony right now, but if anybody's listening on... Speaking of somebody that's right on schedule, we can now open a full meeting of the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. And what we're going to do here is a public hearing, and there'll be possible work sessions, but I'm going to open a public hearing both on Senate Bills 500 and 501 because everybody that signed up in this first portion has signed up to testify on both. And maybe it'll be different on the sign-in sheets that are back there, but most people want to speak to both issues. I'm going to tell you that the environment we're living in is one that's pretty tight on money. I want to also mention to you that the governor and others have been saying we're going to try to get creative in terms of coming up with money for these bills. But these bills do have to go to ways and means. That's just the environment we're in. I don't want any more arguments like we saw on the floor of the Senate about trying to do end runs and stuff like that. So consider this a dress rehearsal, okay, today. This is dress rehearsal for something that you'll be doing again in the Ways and Means Human Services sub, and there may be some creative fundraising techniques that come along to offset some concerns that those folks may have about the general fund impact. Somebody said to me the other day that you know, $50,000 isn't much, but $50,000 here, $50,000 there, after a while you end up with real money kind of thing. So we're going to be sensitive to that as we proceed. By the same token, even the governor addressed this issue when he was speaking at the governor's summit on hunger last week. Don't be deterred at this point. With that, I'm going to ask Representative Dave Hunt if he'll come. Oh, wait a minute. You need to give us some background on both these bills a little bit. You want to do that? Very quickly.
Mr. Chair, I'll review both measures. Senate Bill 500 appropriates $49,000 to the Department of Human Services for the provision of fruits and vegetables from farmers markets to individuals eligible for the Women's, Infants, and Children's Program. It does declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2003. Senate Bill 501 appropriates $40,000 to the department for administering and increasing the redemption rates for the Seniors Farmers Market Nutrition Program, also declaring an emergency effective July 1st, 2003. Both measures have no revenue impact. As the chair said, though, we have potential fiscal impacts because of each measure having a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, I'm going to ask Representative Dave Hunt if he would come up and share with us first off.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Will you be declaring a conflict of interest on Senate Bill 501?
And 500.
Okay, thank you.
Because of senior farmers,
yeah.
Oh, I thought it had to do, in spite of my youthful appearance, with the fact that I have something to do with sponsoring these bills. You're hitting me for being chronologically...
I'm praising you for being chronologically impaired, yes.
Chronologically advantaged,
advantage.
Sunny boy. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt, and I represent a district in northern Clackamas County, actually pretty much right in between, halfway in between Senator Shield and Senator Byers' districts, kind of in that area where we have a combination of lots of hungry people, but also people who have real access to farmers markets. And so I'm proud to be here and testify today in support of both Senate Bills 500 and 501. All the experts on hunger issues are here, and I think you're well aware of a lot of the statistics. So some of the statistics are in my testimony. I'm just going to skip over those. I just want to really represent all of my House colleagues who you'll see have co-sponsored this bill. We have a very broad bipartisan group of House members who have co-sponsored both of these bills. I think it really demonstrates the urgency of the issue of hunger, but also the importance of this approach in terms of beginning to address this problem. We really see these as both collaborative and creative approaches to beginning to address this issue. Certainly doesn't solve the problem, but begins to address it in a way that really is a win-win-win. We win because we have access to more federal dollars by a smaller state match. We win, obviously, by providing access to food for hungry families and for hungry seniors. And we have the additional win of providing a benefit to farmers. You'll notice that one of the statistics that you'll get later is that 42% of farmers who have been surveyed plan to actually increase their total production as a result of this particular program. So especially in these economic times, we've got an opportunity here to address two real economic challenges: hunger, which is so much increase because of the economy, as well as the plight of farmers who have an opportunity to be assisted here as well. And the only other thing I would urge you is really to act expeditiously on this. I realize there's going to be a subsequent Ways and Means referral. Obviously, with your strong recommendation from this committee, I'm sure it's just going to sail right through Ways and Means, so I have great confidence in the Ways and Means process to be able to
look
to you all.
Don't you just love rookies, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, don't you hate it when yeah, right.
I would urge you to act favorably and expeditiously on both these bills, because it's a real critical opportunity, not only because we've obviously got farmers markets that are going to be already going at the start of the fiscal year, but because a lot of growers are going to be making decisions about what kind of volume of food they're going to need to be growing far in advance of that. And so we have a real opportunity for a win-win-win, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here and appreciate your support. Thanks.
Any cross-examination of the rookie?
Good job.
Thank you for coming, Representative Hunt. Don Schellenberg from the Farm Bureau is signed up next. So, Don, come on down and talk to us.
Don's going to propose that we pay a good minimum wage for the collection of this food.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Moving along.
Ready?
Yes, Don.
Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, here today in support of Senate Bills 500 and 501. Because of the economic conditions we find ourselves today in Oregon, the combination of these two bills makes it possible to assist both the producer and at least a certain specific class of consumers, maybe not all consumers, but certainly those who are in the greatest need, probably. At the end of 2001, Oregon agriculture had the highest gross income in the history of the state, some $3.5 billion. Sadly, it was also the lowest net income in the last 20 years. I say that in order to give you an indication of what the status of the agriculture economy is. And because of that economy, farmers have sought other ways to market their products, ways that would give them a higher net return. And a couple of those ways are kind of synonymous. One is the farmer's market, and the other is the local farm stands. You drive around Oregon today, you see many of these farm stands. The farmer's markets are in the cities, where the farmer has to, in fact, transport the food into the city himself and then market it there. But these venues are also an excellent source of healthy, nutritious food for Oregonians. By eliminating the middleman, the price of commodities can be less than those at the commercial retail outlets, and at the same time produce a greater net income for the grower. So agriculture has been looking for every opportunity to increase their net income. This is not the sole way of doing it. It's not the whole answer for the agriculture community. There are many farmers that don't have the time to do this. They don't have the inclination, perhaps, or even the opportunity to do this kind of marketing. So it's not the answer, total answer for the agricultural community, but it certainly is one opportunity and one that ought to be pursued. And again, many are. Senate Bill 500 and 501 serve to augment specifically, according to the bill, the farmers' markets. And that assists seniors and women with children, the WIC program, in purchasing healthy, fresh farm produce at less than commercial retail store prices. If I could amend the bill, I would, to include farm stands. As the way it reads, it wouldn't include a farm stand, as I understand it. But I suspect that probably there are federal guidelines, and I understand that this money that would be appropriated leverages federal dollars into Oregon, and probably the farm stands themselves don't fit within those qualifications. If they did, I would suggest to the committee that we do amend the bill to include the farm stands. Having said that, I would just conclude and ask for your support for Senate Bill 500 and Senate Bill 501. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a feeling if they could have been included, they probably would have. There's experts in it.
I don't know the answer to that, but I could consult with legislative counsel.
Well, what I'm suggesting is we've got experts already waiting to answer the question. I saw three hands go up, so they can decide which one of the three wants to answer it. We don't need a... Any other questions? Don, we sure appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my pleasure.
I'm going to start a public hearing.
I know that.
Oh, okay.
We were just wanting to educate...
The uneducable.
The basically uneducable.
Thank you.
I'm going to just keep us moving as fast as I can. Suzanne Biggs is next, and I'm going to announce it. Jack... Yeah, let's do it. Two at a time. Jack Gray, come on up. And I'm just going to... Once one person stands up to leave, I'm going to call another one. We're just going to play musical chairs here, okay? So, Suzanne, you're first. Jack and Mike Hessel's next, so he can be ready to jump to his feet. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Suzanne Briggs. I am the chair of the Oregon Farmers Market Association. This is a volunteer membership organization of farmers markets, farmers, and citizen activists that support the growth and success of farmers markets throughout the state. Last weekend, we had our third Oregon Farm Direct Marketing Conference in Eugene. It was attended by more than 300 farmers, market managers, and citizen activists. Direct marketing is a growing and dynamic segment of Oregon agriculture. I have served as the chair on the association since 1999. I initially became involved with Farmers Market when I participated in starting the Hollywood Farmers Market in Northeast Portland in 1997. The Hollywood Farmers Market now attracts more than 4,000 people every Saturday morning from May through October. This is a representative growing of the growing popularity of farmers markets throughout the state. Farmers markets are good for farmers and for the communities they serve. As we all know, we have both a rural economic crisis and a hunger crisis in our state. We have the opportunity to leverage federal monies to help address both problems with a small investment from state dollars. The WIC and Senior Farmers Market coupon programs are a successful collaborative effort between the Department of Human Services, Department of Seniors and People of Disabilities, Oregon Department of Agriculture, and the Oregon Farmers Market Association. You have appropriated a total of $89,000 of new state monies for the WIC and Senior Farmers Market coupon program. And when we leverage that, hundreds of thousands of dollars come into the farmers markets and support these markets and their citizens. These monies are help feed economically vulnerable seniors, women, and children in the state, and simultaneously help support economically vulnerable Oregon family farms. That's a big return on our investment. The WIC and Senior Farmers Market coupon money stays and multiplies in Oregon. This is a win-win-win proposal for farmers, for vulnerable segments of our population, and for the state as a whole. Farmers markets are a success story in this state. In the last 3 years, we've increased the number of farmers markets from 32 to 62 markets. We've increased the number of farmers participating, and we have reintroduced Oregon growers to over 90,000 citizens each week in the peak of the season. By rebuilding these relationships, we are also rebuilding the cultural bridges between the rural and urban residents of the state and also reviving our downtown business centers. A small investment of the state funds now for the farmers market season will immediately leverage these dollars to boost Oregon's rural economies and feed hungry people. I ask that you support these bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
In the interest of time, I've got one question here. I appreciate these folks willing to come and testify, but I don't think they're preaching to the choir here. If they've got written statements to put on record, the one thing that I want to know is, can we include the farm stands?
Well,
if we can or can't, let's find out about that and pass these things. And
yeah, head for Roseburg. And
no, I'm heading for Roseburg, but I've got
okay.
Manifold things to do, and I'm in agreement. I think all the folks are in agreement. Our testimony is kind of doubling up on itself here. And
I'm in a quandary. I hate to see people come here to testify, not be heard.
Well, Mr. Chair, one way to get out of the quandary is to go ahead and go into work session and get the bills passed and then reopen the public hearing, and we can listen to the testimony.
Whoever has time to stay can listen to testimony.
I'd be happy to stay. Just do that, and then that way we can excuse Senator Fisher.
Not a matter of that. It's just a matter of saving everybody's time. I mean, I don't hear anybody up here opposing this thing.
I'll modify the plan in a second. One of the things that I wanted to ask Suzanne, since I have her here, is you've talked about some pretty incredible growth. Have big retail outlets caught on at all yet, do you think?
I think there's an incredible synergy of conversation coming together about where our food comes from, how far it travels. And I think that what you see, like New Seasons, actually identifying the local growers, we're seeing more conversations about that. So I think that there is opportunity, and I'm also on the Portland and Multnomah County Food Policy Advisory Council, and we are taking a look at how we can continue to grow this regional demand for local farmers in the cities and also around the state. I mean, there's many initiatives going in that direction.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yes, I think that I can answer that with a strong yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now, I'm going to ask that Jack continue to testify while at least the three people that raised their hands that knew the answer to the question that Bill or Senator Fisher's just raised. One of the three of you come up here and take Suzanne's place at the dais, and we will answer that question, and then we will move to a work session. So you guys figure out which one of the three of you wants to talk. In the meantime, Jack, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wasn't saying that. It's fine that folks testify, but rather than getting up and reiterating the same things as they say, we agree with so-and-so, you know, get them put on the record. And I agree that if they've come here to speak, they need to speak. But these are bills that I think we're pretty much in accord that we're going to support and work every way we can to see them continue.
And what I want to say to you, since you've raised the issue, is it's not just here. We need to make sure that they get our input down at Human Services Ways and Means.
Certainly.
And that's where we want to make sure we support them. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm somewhat in a quandary myself what to say here. But I was just going to go ahead with my written statement here and read it. And I just want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to the committee. I'm
Can
here
you
to
identify
support
yourself
both.
Again?
My name is Jack Gray. I'm a farmer from Notai, Oregon, which is about 25 miles west of Eugene.
We have the Willamette Valley is so informal. Notai.
Right. We have a diversified 150-acre crop and livestock farm. We raise vegetables, berries, herbs, and beef. Half of our products are sold wholesale through brokers and processors, and the rest is direct marketed through farmers markets and a 330-family CSA. CSA stands for Community-Supported Agriculture. In our case, it's a box program where families receive a weekly box of produce throughout the growing season after they've joined up. For the last 2 years, we've been supplying produce to seniors who qualify for the Seniors Farmers Market Nutrition Program and individuals in the WIC program. I think these are just great programs. They're definitely win-wins for everybody. One of the goals in our farm is to try to get produce out to those who can least afford it. And we believe eating healthy food really should be everyone's right. At the same time, we need to get paid for what we produce. And these programs are wonderful combinations of both social values, really. They get quality food to those who need it while also directly paying the farmer for what they produce. Local farms are struggling. High labor crop production is really fleeing the state and the nation. If we're not careful, there'll soon be very little local food really on local tables, I believe. We need to do whatever we can to support the small local farm tradition in the state. The WIC and Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program puts federal dollars into a vital segment of the farm economy that has received very little federal support in the past. SB 500 and SB 501 will get federal dollars out into the Oregon farm economy while also supplying much-needed fresh produce for many Oregonians in need. It'd be a real shame to see this program wither away for lack of administrative money. We need to build up our Oregon economy. To do so, we must take advantage of all the opportunities that come our way. Please take advantage of this opportunity and support SB 500 and 501. Thanks.
Did you realize that you just came up with a nice slogan for a campaign that ought to be a national campaign? And we ought to have a local food for local tables campaign.
Well, they're starting up. We're starting one in Lane County right now, a buy local, buy Lane campaign. And I think there is a groundswell of interest in supporting local agriculture, and there's a lot of facets to it, just food security and just the vulnerability of our country if our food isn't produced here. So.
If you were a creative slogan genius like the good senator from Cottage Grove, it'd buy local, buy Lane, by God, or something like that, right?
By golly.
By golly, I say. By local, by plane, by golly. Yes, there you are.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, now to answer some questions for us.
Yes, I'm Patty Whitney Wise. I'm the Executive Director for the Hunger Relief Task Force. In terms of the roadside stands, in the Senior Farmers Market Program that is allowed for certified roadside stands and certified farmers markets, it has not been allowed through the legislation in the WIC Farmers Market Program. However, We are, with the department, looking into whether if we put some of these new dollars into expanding the program to roadside stands, if we can still get the federal match. And that's the key issue that has to be looked at. If we're putting in these dollars and it is a slightly different program from what the WIC Farmers Market already authorizes, it seems like there may be some flexibility there. So I just want you to know that if we can, we will be adding roadside stands to the WIC program as well, and we are certainly looking at that as part of reauthorization of those programs in the future from the federal level so that it happens for all states.
So you are presently talking with our folks in D.C. about when reauthorization occurs, adding roadside farmers' roadside stands.
Yes, and we're also checking to see if actually we could do that with our state dollars and still qualify for the federal match. There is some flexibility in how you use your state dollars that go towards that match, and we're looking at that possibility, in which case, with the extra state dollars that are that we have in this bill, we could expand it to at least some roadside stands. I'm thinking particularly in the rural areas where there aren't farmers markets available.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
Yeah, this is something that's really frustrated me because you start getting out of the Portland area, you wind up with people driving 30 miles to spend $2. Doesn't make any sense. And they're going right past places that they could get these things more reasonable. And it's almost more frustrating as a government boondoggle than it is a help to people that do that. And I've had numerous people call me from my outlying districts and saying it's absolutely utterly foolish for me to have to drive down to Talent or something, you know, to when they live north of Grants Pass in order to get to a place that's a farmer's market instead of a fruit stand. And it doesn't make any sense. We ought to do everything we can to back up and see and how fast can we get some knowledge of whether the feds will allow this.
I'm hoping within 2 to 4 weeks max.
Okay. Which puts it in 2 years from now.
Oh. No. We'll pursue it more diligently than that.
As far as the good it does us here.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I guess the question would be, would these bills as drafted allow for that then, or do we have to change
the bills? Would not have to change the bills to do that. That would be something the department could do on their own.
Okay.
That's okay then, if that's the case.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we clarified that. Anything else? Any other questions? If not, thank you both. I'm going to ask the committee real quickly, do you want to hear further testimony? Do you want to move on the bills? Do you want to go straight to work session? What's your preference? I've got four people here and probably a few others over there. I don't want to cut off public testimony.
It's fine if you could just instruct them to acquiesce where other people have spoken to. If they've got something new to offer, fine.
As you come forward, don't repeat something that somebody else has said. Let's just head on down the line. I'm going to ask Mike Hessel and Angela. H-O-A-R-D? Horde? I didn't want to mispronounce your name. Just try, and if you have written testimony, we'll pass it over there. Realize you've got four votes. If we were near sine die, we'd be holding up signs that would say, do you want to talk or do you want the bill passed? You know, but we're not going to do that right now.
I'm Mike Hessel. I grow melons.
Oh, great.
Specialize in melons, mostly cantaloupe, some watermelons. I can make this real fast. These two constituencies, the seniors and children, are the most discriminating of all my customers. They're uninhibited. They appreciate melons. Somehow the seniors, I think, are a little bit different. The seniors remember the melon that grandfather gave them in the garden when they were five, and, of course, nothing will ever taste as good as that. The melons I sell generally don't travel very well. I have sold them to supermarkets in the past, a few of the more durable ones. I had a market for a while. I sold 1,200 pounds a day during the season, and they were very happy with it, so happy that they're growing them themselves now and not doing quite as good a job, in my opinion. This program, this coupon program, brings new people to the market, people that I don't see. Most of my customers are regular customers. I see them every week. They load up on melons, go home. The WIC and the seniors coupons both bring new people to the market. We have tastes out. These are eye poppers, literally eye poppers. People just, they put a taste in and they just, wow. And so that's the new point I guess I would like to make, is that there is an educational aspect to this, and I think that's very important, especially for the children. And of course, it might make them market customers later on, or farmers.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it's getting you new customers. That's good.
Where's your farm?
South of Corvallis on Peoria Road. If you're driving south and you get off I-5, you can come on by. I have a roadside stand also.
Well, where you can do the advertising you want right here.
Yeah.
let's go ahead. You're Angela, and I'm going to ask Sharon Thornberry to come up and take the empty seat. Go ahead, Angela.
Hi. My name is Angela Horde. I receive WIC.
Huh.
Last summer, I received the farmer's market vouchers, and I took my children to the market, and the things that we purchased and brought home, blueberries, we made muffins. It's nice that my children see that corn isn't opened out of a can. Kernels are just little round things that they do come on a cob, and so that there's variety. Green beans, they taste different fresh than they do out of a can. Gives them variety. Anyway, I was just wanting to say, I love the vouchers. They're great. I would like to continue receiving them. And I guess that's it.
Thank you.
I really don't know what to say. You all make me nervous.
We make each other nervous, too. You did an excellent job.
You actually make me laugh.
You did an excellent job.
Thank you.
Senator Corcoran makes everybody nervous. I mean, yeah.
He makes everyone nervous?
Yeah, yeah. That's part of his job, you know.
Oh, well, he
pays for it once in a while.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. You did very well, and I'm glad to have somebody that's got this experience sharing
with
us.
This experience coming here, going to farmer's market?
Actually, again, it's that educational piece where your children find out that corn doesn't grow in a can.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
It is. Thank you.
It doesn't, Roger says. The next person that I want to fill the seat just vacated is Donalda Dodson. And Sharon, go ahead.
I'm Sharon Thornberry. I'm the Community Food Programs Advocate for Oregon Food Bank. You have my written testimony. So in the interest of not repeating anything for Senator Fisher, I'd like to talk about what I think has been so important about this and what the potential is for us, especially in the areas that you talk about that are underserved. There is real economic development potential for people in Oregon. You can grow products even in your backyard to sell at a farmer's market and make additional income. There is potential here in supporting these programs and actually helping low-income people in the future become part of the marketing public, who will make additional dollars and supplement their income. And then in the underserved areas, that's particularly an opportunity. In Tillamook County, where they just started their return to a farmer's market in the last year or so, these coupons have been an important part of the revenue of that market and have made that market work, and they're looking forward to a very exciting season again in working with these coupons. And it's very important over there where employment's been so low and they have so many seniors and families at risk, so that's been an important part. The other thing is I'd just like to share a couple of personal stories for myself. My daughter and grandson had WIC Farmers Market coupons, and at the age of three, my son and grandson just loved going to the market. It was the biggest adventure of the week, was he waited for the day to go visit the farmers. And he would come home and talk a great deal. And now at the age of almost six, he can tell you the difference between going to a retail grocery store and buying produce and going to the market stand and buying it or to the farmers market. He knows the difference in the taste, and he's constantly constantly telling me, Grandma, did you buy this local? So he has learned that lesson well, and I think it's a really good opportunity to educate children and to enforce what has been our agricultural economy here in Oregon and our agricultural way of life. So these are not just hunger relief programs. These are programs that will perpetuate something that's been an essential part of Oregon for centuries. Seniors love it because they get a chance, especially those who have been recipients of gleaning programs, like it because they get a chance to support the farmers who have supported gleaning for many years. Oregon's farmers have been very generous in helping with hunger relief programs and donating to gleaning. And so this is a way for low-income recipients to now have some way of rewarding those farmers for their support. And we really, they really are excited about that. So it's a strong win for everyone involved for a variety of reasons, and I urge you to support these bills and to try to move them along as quickly as possible because the season is coming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Even as I'm introducing Donelda Dodson, who's the chair of the Hunger Relief Task Force, it occurs to me that Sharon took me back many years. I never thought of this. I mean, I'm sitting on your Hunger Relief Task Force, and I had not thought about the fact that when we were kids, the very first television that my family bought was bought with money that we got from our 4-H projects, because we were a poor family, and Dad said, if you're ever going to have a TV, you kids have got to, you know, sell enough sweet corn to do it, and we did.
Well, the Tillamook County Farmers Market this year is having a youth stand that's just for that purpose. It's to encourage young people to grow small amounts of crops and sell them at the youth stand, and they're all going to work together to run the stand, the kids cooperatively. So it's the same model.
Educational, helps the poor raise and sell some stuff at farmers markets, so it's a win.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a comment, you know, talking of the taste of the difference of fresh and canned and this kind of thing, I go back in heart to the gentleman that had the melon farm. He said his melons don't ship well. I'm just sitting here starting to drool because I know exactly what he's talking about. If the melon doesn't ship well, it's ripe. And it's got some taste to it. And if a melon ships well, you're never going to get a good taste out of a melon. And I can say that after having helped to raise and harvest several hundred acres of melons.
I don't know if you've ever listened to Garrison Keillor, but he talks about tomatoes that are strip mined down in Texas. And that was his term. And they sometimes taste, I mean, if they're shipped in from a long ways, taste like they've been strip mined somewhere. And with that, the last person on our list this morning is Chuck Craig, who's going to come up and take the seat beside Donelda. Go ahead.
I always wondered what made Senator Fisher drool.
I'll treat you to one of my karate chops that can open a melon in one swat and scoop the heart out and eat it faster than you can.
let's not have dueling senators up here. Donelda, save us, please.
Well, I'm Donelda Dodson. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health
Seedless
within the Department of Human Services. And the Senior Farmers Market Program and the WIC Farmers Market Program are within our department. But this is a very collaborative, as you've heard others talk about, between the Department of Agriculture and seniors with persons with disabilities. I don't want to repeat what people have said. One thing I think we need to emphasize that this is locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables, which means that people can't ship things in and then sell them at the market. In order to qualify for these programs and to be able to sell fresh fruits and vegetables, you need to grow them yourself or have a farm, you know, participate with a group of farmers. There are also over 500 farmers who participate in the program and over 187 roadside stands. And we are hopeful to be able to expand that program for the WIC participants so that they will also be able to use roadside stands. The other aspect about the farmers market for seniors is it's for seniors that are age 60 and 60 years young and older, who are low income and who receive food stamps. So it's to those, the neediest of the needy. We're starting our third year with that program this year. The first year, 72% of all the coupons that were issued, the seniors did redeem them. Last year, 91%. So the seniors are really getting in step with this program. Many of them are also using the coupons to buy fruits and vegetables and preserving some of those so that they can extend their food dollars not only during the summer but through the winter months also. Then just one other fact about the program is that over 50% of the people that utilize the farmers markets will then go back and utilize those markets without coupons. So it draws people to those markets. Over 50% of them said they've learned how to use some of those, like some families, young families, don't know what beets are. I mean, they've only seen them in the can. They don't know what. And so a lot of education goes on in how to use beets, how to use some of the squash crops and some of those things. So people are learning how to use some of these produce, and then they will go back and purchase them again. And some of the farmers have told us that without the benefit of the coupons, they would not be able to continue to do this service. Thank you. And I also need to say that this is a very important concept, and even but this is not in the governor's budget.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Ginalda, for sharing with us. Chuck Craig from the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for the Department. I don't want to repeat what's been said already. I just want to say the Department supports these two bills very strongly, and I think one piece of information you might be interested in is that we believe the rate of return on this program is about 8-1. As best we can tell, the combined in-kind service value of the combined in-kind services from Health and Human Services and Ag is about $111,000, and the amount of federal dollars value of the distributed coupons in 2002 is like $880,000, and that's a remarkable rate of return, really. So I think that might be helpful.
Can you carry that message to Ways and Means for us?
We will do that, Mr. Chair.
Let's make sure that everybody does as much of that as we can. Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much. Yes.
You got your cell phone off?
Yeah, I did. I did. That's. Oh. I want you to know that's the first time that has ever happened to me.
In the last.
In here.
Don't worry, we never miss an opportunity to harass somebody in committees. With that, I'm going to close the public hearings on Senate Bill 500 and Senate Bill 501 and open a work session on Senate Bill 500.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 500 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Referred or referred?
Do you want to have a recommendation?
Oh, with a due pass recommendation.
Referred to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 500 is passed and referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Let's now close the hearing on Senate Bill 500, open a hearing on Senate Bill 501.
Work session, Mr. Chair.
A work session, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 501 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer recommends Senate Bill 501 with a due pass recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion? If not, let's have a roll call vote.
Senator
Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 501 is passed and referred on to the Ways and Means Subcommittee, or the Ways and Means Committee, with a due pass recommendation. That concludes the business of the day, and our committee is adjourned.